Give it to me, Pamela.
All right. Pamela's giving it to you. She's recording. By the way, for people that don't know who Pamela is, she's our personal assistant.
Now it's Jason's mom.
Oh, my God. My God. Already inviting the GP has paid off a dividend.
We're rolling.
Okay. So basically we're in our, I'm in the, this is a super professional studio here in Springfield, Illinois, and I got a guest host with me tonight. And he is pretty much the master of all things metal and horror, amongst many other things, music. But we decided to ask him to come along tonight, be part of this podcast. Oh, what's going on over there, Pete?
Am I the guest?
Are you out in the wind? Are you rolling on the ground?
What's happening? Hurricane is back.
The hurricane snuck up on me here.
All right, let's pretend like that intro didn't even happen. And why don't we do a countdown? And then you introduce the podcast and what we're talking about. And then either one of us will introduce Graham.
You're going to care blood, ain't you?
God damn it, Ralph. Get out of here. Go on, get. Leave people alone.
You'll never come back again.
Oh, shut up, Ralph.
It's got a death curse.
Hey, welcome to another exciting episode of So Bad It's, the podcast where we talk about a lot of crazy pop culture things, and it doesn't get much crazier than Halloween time, which is when we're recording this one. And since we just passed Friday the 13th last Friday, we decided that we're going to tackle the Friday the 13th movie series. And who is we, you might ask? Well, funny you should say, because it is myself, Peter Charbonneau, and my co-host, John Zemsky.
Oh, yeah.
John Zemsky.
Yeah, that's me. Oh, God. Yeah.
And we decided that there's just no way that we could do this film series justice without having a special guest star with us tonight. And so we called around and we found what I think is probably the best guest star we could possibly have on this episode. John, you want to give a little lead into our guest?
Yeah. First off, I want to say we didn't call anywhere, did we? Like, we don't actually call people, do we? I love the way you phrase that. It sounds like we have like a real production studio and all that stuff. And get Graham on the phone and see if he's available for podcast this evening.
We had our producer.
Yeah.
Track people down. Yeah. See who wanted to come on.
Yeah, and then we also have those Chilean miners that had been trapped that were freed, and a lot of them do some research for us and help out around the office. But anyway, sitting next to me is Graham, if you want to know the exact spelling, Lamontagne, also known as Permy, and he is here. When Pete and I were talking about Friday the 13th. And I was like, I haven't seen every single movie, and I can't remember every single bit. The first thing that popped into my head was Graham Wood. Like, even the kid's got, like, a total photographic memory. But anyway, so, Graham, do you want to introduce yourself to people, and, you know, like, in a really corny and gay kind of way?
Yeah, I'm Graham Lamontagne, and I'm actually wearing a Friday the 13th t-shirt right now because I take this seriously.
That is true.
He comes prepared.
Yeah, I took a shot, and it wasn't like a casting couch thing, because there's a lot of crappy things going on in the news
you
right now.
You filed it under Weinstein.
Yeah, that's true. But I did take a photo that we're going to post up on Twitter later of Graham wearing his Friday the 13th shirt, and we will probably get to Graham's obsession with shirts in general, because that's something that everybody needs to know about him. But Yeah, I mean, between the three of us, I don't know if you could find people that really enjoy the series any more than we did. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Graham, tell us a little bit about that nickname, Permie. I don't understand where that came from.
Well, when I got to college, I didn't know anybody. And one thing people took notice of me right away is that I just couldn't stop smiling. I was so happy to be there. I went to Catholic school my whole life. I hated high school, and so I was ready to drink some beer and get with some girls. And so they noticed. They're like, "You're permanently smiling, Permie." So
it's, oh, come on,
it's stuck.
No, it's probably because you had a gigantic fro. And I'm picturing Graham with, like, nope, you know, big. No, he's got straight hair, so it's kind of
literally funny. When people would meet me, they didn't know my name was Graham. So they thought it was Permie, like on my license.
I like calling you. I like calling him GP. I don't know why, and also Grandmaster Graham, which it has nothing to do with anything. But
sounds cool.
So yeah. you weren't strictly a fan of, like, latter day Mike Brady when he had the perm.
No.
Oh, come on, latter day Mike Brady was hot. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to go there, but so Friday the 13th, Pete. I mean, I don't even know. Was the first movie in the 70s? Was it early 80s?
First movie was actually 1980 when it came out, and I don't even know where to begin. It's got such a rich, I guess is one way to put it, history at this point, and I mean, a huge part of our adolescence and growing up, and had a profound effect on our sense and sensibilities. So I think what the idea that kind of kicked off for us to do this episode, not that it doesn't lend itself, since it, like we said at the outset, it is around Halloween and we just did have a Friday the 13th, but where I am in Tampa, Florida, there's an awesome little old historic theater, the Tampa Theater, and they decided for last Friday to do a Friday the 13th double feature, mm-hmm, showing the original Friday the 13th from 1980, and then randomly picking what they termed as the most Friday the 13th of the Friday the 13th movies.
I like that.
Yeah, Friday, that's interesting.
Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Which is for the layman, that's part four, right?
That's part four of, I don't even know what we're up to, because it's kind of branches off.
And for the full-on layman, that's an IV. V, right? And a V.
And it stars a Corey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
One of the Coreys. Yes. And one of the Crispins.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And Teddy Bear.
Oh, God. All right. Yeah, we're going to talk.
Last American Virgin's in it.
We're definitely going to talk a little bit about that movie specifically. And I, as Pete was going to the theater to watch it, I was watching it at home. And doing something I've never done before, and that's actually, like, taking notes watching a horror movie, which is really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Especially the fact that I was having a little bit of whiskey watching the movie, you know, so then the notes just went off the rail. But there were a couple things that I just noticed that were so funny about it. That really is a good movie. Like, I really, really enjoy that sequel.
Part four.
Yeah, you talking Pete, about? What was going on in Tampa when you went to see that movie in the theater? I mean, did people show up with their board shorts and their little white, you know, dots on their nose to keep the sun out?
Well, there was, of course, and I knew it would happen. There was one guy who brought a hockey mask with him, and he had his GoPro, and he was filming himself wandering around the theater.
Oh, God.
So you knew that was happening. There were a lot of people wearing Wu-Tang T-shirts that had, like, a hockey mask on it. I don't know if Wu-Tang has an album, or maybe they just, I don't know, one of their concerts, they co-opted the Friday the 13th logo or something.
That's totally out of our element. No one would know that on this podcast. Yeah.
So yeah, we're out of our depth on that, but this is just what I observed. And I was, you know, what I was surprised was the mix of male to female ratio. I would say that there were nearly as many females there as there were guys, which, you know, traditionally these movies tend to be male skewered towards males.
Oh, no pun intended. Yeah.
But both male and female have been skewered on screen.
Yes. Yes.
With various utensils and
I saw a cute girl jabbed in the eye with a plastic horn before. We're getting to the point, you know, later on in some of these films where you just, you know.
How about the age? Were there any young people there?
Oh.
There was a couple of young kids, which I was kind of surprised about.
Like 5, 10?
Yeah, no joke. They were like, it was like a family outing, and there was a couple of 5-year-old, like 7-year-old kids. And I almost wish that my old days of being a journalist, I kind of wanted to just talk to some of these people and just get their story. It was an interesting array of people there. And I guess we can kind of get into it this way because, yeah. There's no way we're going to talk about this. We're not going to do this sequentially. We're not going to go 1 through Jason X and then Freddy versus and all that, you know, because that's I suspect a lot of our listeners or all 3 of them probably have some familiarity with the series. So we're just kind of going to take it from our vantage point. And so I figured that we'd start it out. One of the interesting things that I found attending last week was it was very much a community event. People were there to be entertained, obviously. And it was almost like going to see 2 comedies.
You made it sound like it's a farmer's market or something.
There were some really great, the squash was about as fresh as you could possibly want it to be.
Did they have balloons on the cars? Are they selling used cars in the parking lot?
No used cars, but let me tell. I got to talk 1 second about the pears. The pears were just—they were so sweet, and just you bit into one, and you're like, "This is what a pear should taste right, like." Now, it was really delicious.
All right, Graham and I were on point, but you're really going off on a tangent here. I think
he lives in Florida. He can get pears year round.
We're going to be ganging up on Pete a little bit tonight. Just the fact that Graham and I are basically cheek to cheek sitting at the same table right now.
Cue the lady in red.
professional studio.
Cue Chris DeBerg.
So continue. I'm sorry.
My biggest takeaway was just it almost seemed like I was attending 2 comedies. Like there was a ton of laughter and it made me kind of think back like to when you're a kid. Like when I first saw these movies, I was like early teens, you know, 11, 12, 13. And certainly they scared the crap out of me when I was a little kid. And then as you get older, they're less scary and it's more entertainment value. So I wonder if it was a similar experience when these films were released, you know, like we're teens and 20s and 30-year-olds going in and just like laughing hysterically, because that's what it was. It was a laugh riot and it was totally entertaining. I will say one other thing and I'll turn it over to get your guys' thoughts about this. But the original at the end, the big jump scare when Jason comes out of the lake, for whoever in that theater had not seen Friday the 13th before, it still was very effective. There was a lot of shouts followed by laughter, followed by applause when that happened at the end. And I thought that was kind of cool, you know, to be the movie is what it's 36 mm-hmm. years old, 37 years old now. So to still have that effect, I thought was really kind of cool. And I was glad that I was able to experience something like that. So turn it over, Graham, why don't you jump in here? When you look back, when you watch these movies now, what kind of feeling do you get from it? Like, how has that changed from when you first started?
Yeah, well, keep in mind, I was born in 82. Mm-hmm. So I can remember, I think it was probably the USA Network. Elvira used to host the horror movies. And my dad would watch these Friday the 13th movies. I'd walk in the room and freak out and be scared to death. I can specifically remember I think it's 3 with the chubby son on the ATV gets his head cut off by Jason, and that haunted me. That stuck with me. And I had this nightmare as a kid where Jason cornered me in an alley, chopped my head off, but it didn't come off.
Oh,
and then my mom dabbed it with Vaseline, and I was okay.
Come on.
Yeah, I woke up like crying.
Oh, I was going to say, you wake up,
that
you
was That was part five, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, do you wake up at that point where, like, Mom, I had a nightmare? Or you're like, man, their Vaseline is so multifunctional.
I can remember. My parents came in, and I was, like, screaming. So I did not actually watch them for real until I was – you know, a teenager. And then I loved them. I thought they were funny. But, I mean, I was telling John before we started, I can remember my parents would take me to, like, Harry and the Hendersons Big, and we'd see a poster for a Friday the 13th. And that's back, too, when they didn't really target the trailers to genres. And we'd catch a trailer before a kid's movie. And, I mean, it would freak me out.
Well, and also, they would – you're right, Graham. I haven't thought about that in a long time. Pete, you remember this too. They would basically take a preview or a trailer that they shouldn't be showing to a PG crowd, and they would take out the most gory parts and boobs, and then they would just show it to the PG crowd.
Yeah.
It's like, don't you realize the content is going to make
– Yeah, well, it was – marketing was clearly not as sophisticated back then. Right. And, you know, previews I don't think had the – you know, you can tell when you watch on YouTube now some of those old previews, they were just kind of thrown together, and I don't think as much thought went into them as – you know, it's not like people will – I mean, I remember hearing stories like when the new Star Wars trailer was dropping, people would go to see whatever movie was showing the trailer. They'd sit in the trailer and leave. Like, it was more an event. Like, back then it was just like, here's three or four previews before we get the movie going. And yeah, it was just whatever they had available. I don't know how it worked, but yeah, there were rated R previews for G rated movies. It was a free for all. It was great.
Graham, was part five or four, like when you walked in, when your dad was watching, was that your first experience with Friday the 13th?
Yeah, that would be my very first.
Do you remember the first one that you saw, like, start to finish?
Yeah, later, you know, I watched them all in order and loved them.
How old were you around that
time? I mean, I want to say probably like 16, 17.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, still not 20. That's good.
No, it was later.
Okay.
So that 16, that would have been 98.
At that point, were you frightened by anything you saw? Or not really?
No.
No. See, I was definitely more of what my mom and family would call a ninny then, because I was – but, of course, you know, you gotta remember that when these movies started and when I was catching them, I really – Graham, myself, and Pete have talked about this many times. We saw a lot of movies we shouldn't have seen at a certain age, whether it was sexual ones or violent ones or whatever. That was just the way things were. And this was one of those movies.
This place is cursed. Cursed.
Perfect opportunity for Graham to get a beer.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, what is O'Fallon vanilla pumpkin beer? I mean, kid.
Well,
this kid is like gone full on high end.
I thought I'd cheat on Shafley. Oh. Pumpkin and this does not taste
nice. I won't take a picture.
I told him on Twitter.
Did you seriously?
Give us the 30-second sales pitch.
Yeah, 30-second sales pitch.
Oh, man. Shafley Pumpkin Ale, if you can find it. I mean, they ship – they're a St. Louis craft brewery, and they are now shipping as far as New York. If you can find their pumpkin ale, buy a case.
Man, we may wind up with our first sponsor because of Graham being on here. This is incredible.
We should.
All right. So, Pete, you were saying – I'm sorry. We lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, so I think my first experience with the Friday the 13th franchise came probably early 80s, and it was around the time when my cousin had introduced me and my other younger cousins to Halloween, you know, way earlier than we should have. And so, you know, I definitely remember them scaring the crap out of me, and I don't remember which one was the first one I saw, but it was one of those... You know, it was probably a marathon, so it was probably part two or something like that. And I mean, I was hooked. I was scared because I was young, and there was just something about them that just really, you know, caught my imagination, and I've been watching them ever since with various degrees of entertainment value.
So what was your first, John?
Yeah, this is interesting. Here's what happened to me. Pete and I have talked many times that, like, we both had slightly less than legal cable back in the day.
That's three of us. We accidentally got it.
Yeah.
And for years, we didn't know why, but we didn't tell anybody we got it. I can remember coming home from school, turning it on, and it was fuzz, and I cried my eyes out.
So we had my first experience with it was just really my own, which was not a good thing in some ways. And I need to lead in with this. I was going to these summer camps when I was younger. Ooh. My parents were sending me to these like Jewish camps, if you will, at the it's not exactly band camp.
Wait, can you answer this?
I mean, you said that almost like you know, it was like there was like a shame involved to it.
Were you circumcised at Crystal Lake?
No. Okay. I was way before then.
With the rusty machete.
Yeah, it was the Moyle in 3D. It was so I don't know. I can't believe I just said that stuff on here. Anyway, I went to these summer camps, and I went to it was the biggest campgrounds in almost in the country, I think. Just unbelievably amazing. And already I was a little bit of a timid, scaredy kind of kid. So anyway, I'm home around, you know, that time, and I'm watching the New York Islanders, nice, bright hockey, and they're winning their Stanley Cups and whatnot back then. And I'm flipping over, and I'm like, oh, what is this? And Friday the 13th, probably, I'm almost positive it was one or two, was on. And it was scaring the crap out of me, which, by the way, I'd be scared anyway, staying home by myself. We had a two-story house, lots of, you know, creaky things, lots of weird shadows. And I'm flipping back and forth between the Islanders and Friday the 13th because I would see something like that would scare me in the woods, and then I'd flip over to the Islanders, nice bright ice, and I'm like, oh, that's not so bad. But what is it? Why did I have to turn back? Why did I have to flip back to the horror movie? I'm home by myself. Because this is not like the silly, oh, this is funny, let's see what happens. You know, I'm, you know, probably 12, 13, you know, something like that. There's why?
Yeah, I would do the same thing. You watch it, open your eyes, or watch through your fingers, and open them, and you shouldn't be watching. I would censor myself. You talked about we've all started watching R-rated far too early. I censored myself and really didn't watch horror because I was afraid.
Right.
But Lethal Weapon, Predator, that's fine.
Right.
But in terms of Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, just the box cover alone would freak me out to the point where I wouldn't watch it. But like if I saw it on TV, I would almost dare myself to watch it for like 2 seconds.
Right. My parents took me to like the 48 Hours movies because they were too cheap to pay for a babysitter at that point. So I literally like – you know, 512 F-bombs and 715 pairs of boobs later, I had seen pretty much everything. Right. But I had my hand – I mean, you had that moment with your parent. Like, I had my hands in front of my face, or I was just, like, sweating, like, get me out of here. But, yeah, there was something – there was a rush that I got from seeing this character. And at that time, it was, like, a very human character – hunting people down for no reason. It scared the crap out of me. And just that plus the woods aspect. And Pete and I have talked a few times about how that first one especially was filmed on location in the woods. And how I think in a lot of ways that created this new feel for horror movies. And it's just, I couldn't even drive. There were times where my parents were driving the car and I would look, because where we lived on Long Island, there were areas with like real dense, you know, woods. And I would get creeped out. Like I would be staring at the woods, like trying to make sure there was nothing there. We're driving by like 60 miles an hour. Just crazy, crazy. So that was my first, you know, real experience with Friday the 13th.
Well, and I think, I mean, it was the early days of cable, and I mean, there was a science to those, because I did the same thing. I'd be down in the basement. John and my dad were electricians, so that's how we got our illegal cable boxes. And
I just got mine from like a genie or something. We still don't know.
It just magically appeared one day.
I still have a great story. I have already told Graham and Pete about it, but we'll do that another day about when the cable was installed at my house. I'm going to need a lot of whiskey to share that story. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the science was back in the day, for those of you that might be a little bit younger, the cable box was a series of tabs that you would press down, and that would get you from channel to channel.
Oh, so I had a slider, Pete.
The slider came along after.
Yes.
Yep, slider yep. was a later model that was getting, mm-hmm. getting more sophisticated.
I had the push down. You had the push down?
Yep.
My friend Paul Eisen had the dial. Whoa. That was even earlier.
I've never even heard of that.
Oh, it was the dials even before, yeah. And, but this kid was rocking Betamax, so I mean, it was, you know.
Yeah. Oh, God. He was mm-hmm. cutting edge with the Betamax. Mm-hmm. So I would do the same thing. I'd have, like, the Islander game on, and then you would either slide it or you'd hit the button, and you'd go check out. And it was usually HBO, sometimes Showtime Channel 20, HBO, Channel 23. It's amazing the things that you still remember all these years later.
Oh, and I'm sure you don't remember what Playboy Channel was, Pete.
26.
Oh, wait.
Right after MTV at 25.
Wait, let's start that again. I'm going to say, I'm sure you don't remember what the Playboy Channel was. And then you're supposed to say...
What? What's the Playboy Channel?
All right, there you go.
Okay. Sounds like there's some heavy breathing. Graham, are you all right?
No, that was...
Well, I do like the Friday the 13th for the anatomy as much as the stabbing.
Graham.
Yeah, so, and yeah, it's interesting. John and I were talking about this last week after I had come out of the theater, and there's something about those first couple of Friday the 13th. There was that grittiness, like he said, like the first one was shot on location, Toms River, New Jersey, at an actual camp. I think it was called Nobi Bosco.
Oh, we need to go camp out there. Come on now. Okay.
I think it still exists. You can look, there's a couple of guys on YouTube that have done the Friday the 13th location videos where they kind of go to the places and they'll show the camp, they show the lake. You can see they line up the shots from the movies. It's very interesting and certainly worth a look.
Little side note, Nobi Bosco is the name of the first girl I kissed, so that's also memories.
I thought it was a brand of a cookie.
Bosco.
Was that her first name, or was that like her full name? Like, was her first name Nobi and her last name Bosco?
No, it was one full name, just no spaces, but three hyphens.
No, it's like Madonna, but she was called Nobi Bosco.
Yeah, she was. Yes, she was Eskimo, but she lived in Canada. But I met her in the Midwest, even though I lived in New York.
Hey, do you listen to Bjork? No, I'm Nobi Bosco. Okay, I'm gonna be my own star.
I probably shouldn't have mentioned that because now she's going to just get huge. You know what I mean? And I don't mean big. I mean big. So.
Hey, so since Jason's not really in the first Friday the 13th.
Spoiler alert, 40 years later.
Do you think, for me, three on are perfection. Like, because all three right, so starts now, the hockey mask,
yep,
two's
yep.
just a sack on his head.
A lot of people
and
think
one's
that.
Not really
right.
about Friday the 13th at all, in terms of what we now know what the franchise became.
And a lot
all
of
right,
people...
So now we're getting into it. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of this.
Pete, looking back, a lot of people think the hockey mask came one and two because, you know, if you're not of the time, people just assume. But anyway, yeah, continue, Pete.
Well, yeah, so I think now we're going to get interesting, and we're going to see the dynamic of John and I coming from one generation, Graham coming from like a little bit of a later generation, because certainly after watching these again, I just watched part three again tonight just because I felt I had to. And part three is still to this day my favorite. None of these are really good movies, but they're just.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, the Citizen Kane, they are not.
I was just looking at the box set. They were churning out one every year except for 83 and 87 just because how much money they were making.
Yeah, I mean, they were done on super cheap budgets, and the first one was a huge hit, made a ton of money, and then so that just kind of, it kept rolling to some diminishing returns. And, I mean, for my money, after part four, it starts to lose its luster for me. There was just something about those first three, again, shot on location, You know, the first one in New Jersey, second one I think was in Connecticut. The third one, they finally went to California, but it still had that woodsy vibe, you know, it was shot on location, an actual ranch. And then four started to get a little, you know, the production values were up. It was a little more, you could tell they were, I think the house in part four was actually built for the movie. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then part five, I guess, still had that gritty feel, but Jason, although there's a Jason...
That twist is stupid.
Yeah, there's a twist. And spoiler alerts, we're just going to go say spoilers because we figure most people have seen
it. Oh, please, yeah.
That twist ruined five for me, but the kill with the belt against the tree and the eyes, that I saw as a kid accidentally and messed me up.
Oh, boy.
But the girl with the milky breast is amazing in that.
Well, I mean, part five is definitely one of the sleaziest ones, like, as far as, like, you know, there was just no, like, with the dude, like, on the shitter and singing, he's like, oh, my God, chili. Like, it was just really.
Again, though, Pete, again, I just watched A New Blood because when I was younger, that was my favorite, well, one of my favorite movies. They had the stoner on the crapper again.
They have he's shitting in six.
Yes.
He gets out to shit in six.
This is going to come back in a minute to a question that I have for the guys here with as far as like
if you shit you die or if you have sex you die.
Vulnerable, but we're going to get to that in a minute. But Pete, continue. I want to add something here in a minute, but I want to ask Graham this because you're so right, Pete. When he saw these, and again, seeing them in their entirety by 16, 17, you and I are seeing a couple of them, 12, 13, where we shouldn't be, and we're scared out of our minds at the time, and then a little later on, we're seeing more, and then by the time some of them were old enough to like go see them in the theater, you know, it's become more of like a romp and a joke at that point.
And remember, my first was like age 4 or 5. It was young.
Oh, my gosh.
It's interesting how that kind of shapes your perspective on this whole thing. And I mean, I came of age. The first one that I saw in the theater was Part 5, which, granted, not the best one. Although some people love that movie. Like I said, I mean, it's
likable. Yeah.
There are good kills in it. Dudley from Different Strokes is in it, driving a tractor in his red jumpsuit. Mm-hmm. It's got a song in the soundtrack by Pseudo Echo, who before they went, you know, a little pop with their remake of Funky Town.
Jeez, how deep are you digging right now? Oh my gosh.
He didn't do any research at all. That's how tough
his head. Minds here because their first album is a synth pop gem. And Graham, I know that is right up your alley. You definitely need to track it down.
You need to send me this after so I can listen to it. It'll be like discovering a Ministry's first album.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. It's really good synth pop from down under. And they're featured in part five. And so, so that was the first one. And I remember seeing, again, like I didn't see the trailer, but I remember opening up the paper and every Friday when they would have like the movies coming out, they would have like the big advertisements in the movie section. And I remember seeing the big splash for part five. And I somehow convinced my mom to take me for my birthday and my friend to go see it in the theater.
And what did she think of that belt making love in the woods scene?
Yeah,
kidding me?
I don't know. I don't know what my mom was thinking watching that. I remember my friend and I sat the row in front of her. And then at the beginning of the movie, which Corey Feldman makes a little cameo in, and Jason, quote unquote, comes back to life. I remember being so excited. I like turned to my mom and I'm like, Jason's alive. And I was like,
And your mom's like, I am the worst parent ever.
My mom is like, how can I just quietly leave the theater without my son and his friend knowing that I left?
Parent of the Year award right here.
How old were you again, Pete?
Let's see. I had to be, when did part five come out? That was
That was 85.
So I was 13.
All right.
Oh, geez. All right.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
So
that's the age John was having his bar mitzvah, Crystal Lake.
Yep, exactly. Literally. Where do you want to go for your I don't want to go to the woods. No. So I have a theory as to why I like the earlier ones. And, you know, some of it is that gritty setness and that you know, on location feel versus the set feel. But I want to ask Graham before I like kind of taint his
taint
opinion. What are you, 12? No, but
taint misbehaving.
I want to hear, because Graham is a huge fan of 8, which I've actually never
seen.
Oh,
no, my favorite is 6.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you're also a big fan of Manhattan.
You want me to take over and explain why?
Well, I want to hear...
Because Alice Cooper's got his song in part 6.
Well,
I want to hear why you like, you know, your two favorites, and then I want to talk a little bit about, like, why... Like, because Pete and I have a theory about, like, what's scary and all this other stuff. So, well, I want
to
hear...
I mean, to be honest, 3 and 4 are the best, I think. I mean, that's Jason grabbing the mask in the barn, becoming Jason. And 4 is just awesome. Every down to the cast. I mean, it's got hot twins. It's got everything.
Yeah, it's got everything.
But what I really like about...
It's got
about,
a dog. Yep.
So, 5, I do think... was kind of like the slump, and they weren't sure whether to move forward. And 6 was when it got kind of goofy and added the humor.
Good point.
It becomes self-aware.
Yes.
Jason takes on more of a supernatural. And also, I mean, the tie-in, I love Alice Cooper, but he was in a huge slump then, and the Constrictor album tied in with 6. He did Man Behind the Mask. It's got Teenage Frankenstein in it. Mm-hmm. And that resurrected his career. He had videos with Jason in them. So it's got a great soundtrack. Like I said, he's got these supernatural abilities. It became almost like an Evil Dead 2 with the comedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Corey coming back as Tommy.
And, no, he's not in part 6.
Right, but it's his character.
Oh, it's Tommy. Yeah, okay.
So,
because he got to kill him at the beginning.
Well, right? he resurrects
sure.
him. Yeah.
He wants to make sure
right.
he's
gone. Yeah, and he unleashes
him and Horshack from
You should have seen me explaining this to my wife before, and the shame
right.
on her face when I was like, and then, you know, he became, you know, like supernatural right. because he's got the shovel in him, and then the lightning. And when I said the lightning, she checked out. She was like, I'm out. Out of the room.
So
like, I can't even.
6 is just it's fun, and mm-hmm. I've all ever since Can't Buy Me Love, I've had a huge crush on Darcy DeMoss. I even contacted her through Twitter. Ooh. She told me I was a cutie or some shit.
All right.
And that death scene in the van where she gets implanted into the side, they like made the mold of it.
Oh yes.
That's a great kill.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just fun, and that led into 7 and 8, where again it's like self-aware. It's like those scenes in Manhattan are just goofy.
Well, we talk about things a lot of times. Pete and I will talk about things becoming a caricature of themselves. You have stars become a caricature of themselves. You know, Corey Feldman's a perfect example.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, he becomes that as he gets older. But
him and his angels.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a really good point, though. Like, you know, there's this crossover. Pete was talking about it before of like, you know, you like these movies. You're scared of them when you're younger. If you see them when you're younger. And then you start to start liking the kills. And it sounds really sadistic to say, but you start liking them and rooting for them. And I mean, Pete and I even had a moment with our other buddy Pete in the movie theater where we saw First Blood, which is part 7, in the theater together. And I mean, we were like excited, and like I think people were getting a little bit annoyed with us in a way because we were so excited for every kill. And I just recently rewatched that movie, but you know, going back just really quick to why I like the first few movies, they're almost like a different beast. They're almost like a completely different thing, and we could. Pete, I'm just going to say this right now. We could do a two-part on this because, you know, we have so much to talk about. But anyway, one of the things that I like about the earlier films and what scares me is a human being killing for no reason or a reason, but just this blind rage. So to me, Halloween 1 and Friday the 13th 1 was the Psycho of our generation. You know, Psycho back in the day, my parents could not, people would like go to take a shower and they would freak out, you know, just thinking about shutting that curtain, wondering, mm-hmm. you know, is Perkins going to come or whatever. But like, to me, early the Friday the 13th, the first two especially, it's like there's a reason sort of why, you know, the killing is happening and the mom is doing it because the kids were not paying attention.
Yeah,
they're having
a vengeful mother is a great – that makes
great.
That makes number one amazing.
And it's weird. It's really weird looking back that he's not the killer because everyone thinks he is.
It's eclipsed it now.
Yeah, it's just
almost
weird.
Like it didn't happen.
Right. It's just really odd. And then when you have that scene with the mom's head on the this is still all weird stuff. But
well, I think that's why people reacted the way they did in the theater last week was I think there were a lot of people that basically have the preconceived notion like, oh, Friday the 13th, it's Jason, it's the hockey mask. And the first one, you know, is really, I mean, you're talking about part six, which Graham, like you said correctly, like that's when it really became self-aware. Part four started that. Part four was kind of making fun of the genre a bit, but part six is, you know, like from the opening where Jason out to like the Bond theme, you know.
That's great.
You know, it was getting really campy, but we were still too young to realize that. I was just psyched that Jason was coming back in the movie. So that's all I really cared about at the time. But, you know, the first one plays a lot like, you know, a mystery because you don't know who the killer is. You see glimpses of the killer, but it, you know, it's the first one. And, you know, it doesn't really, it's weird because it kind of gives it up at the end.
Right.
But up until that point, it's, you know, what's going on? Why are these people being killed? You know, there's no payoff. Like when Mrs. Voorhees shows up at the end, that's the first time you see her on screen. So it's not like she is somewhere in the background earlier where you can be like, oh, that's the killer. Like you don't get to play that cat and mouse game.
Right. Yeah.
Because isn't every kill shot from like a first person shooter perspective?
It pretty much is. Is every kill, Pete? Like, because it pretty much is, right? Like, you can't play that game of, like, oh, I think it's this person.
Right, because she's never. And then you don't even think it's her because it's a nice old lady.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't look psychotic at all.
And she was, correct me if I'm wrong, she was like an elite actress.
She had been in a bunch of things, and I've seen interviews where, you know, she got a lot of grief by people like, oh, how, you know, why would you do that? And,
right.
You know, then she reprised her role in part two. You know, I think she filmed some scenes in California, just like in a studio, just doing like some voiceover stuff. So she, you know, and she's done panels. Betsy Palmer is her name. I'm not sure if she's still alive at this point.
I'm assuming she's deceased, but I could be wrong.
But she's done, you know, she's done some panels where they've brought in good English there, me. Where they've brought the cast back or parts of the cast of some of the movies to talk about the filming of it. And she's, you know, she's been very gracious and has played along and clearly, you know, enjoys the fact that it's a role that she's, I don't know, may even be most remembered by at this point.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Halloween in a way. The name's going to come to me. The girl in Halloween.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Thank you.
Trading Places.
Own it. You know, like people that own it and they're like, this is what I did and this was awesome. People rally around that. They're like, this is awesome.
That was great for her to return in age 20. I mean, the Halloween started this whole menacing slasher. Halloween 1 is great.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I lose interest in the series.
Yeah,
and that's the interesting thing about Friday the 13th is I can watch any of them 1 through 8.
Same here.
Anytime I watch it.
Isn't that weird?
I mean, Jason Goes to Hell is an abomination that should never have been.
What is that, though? Why? Because I'm the same way.
And what's weird is before I met you and Pete, everyone always was like, you prefer Jason to Freddy? Nightmare is so much better. Nightmare is a better villain in theory. It's just not executed as well. Except for Dream Warriors is a good movie.
Dream Warriors is a good movie. The first movie is good, and it scared the crap out of me.
Right.
Again, because I'm young. But, like, you know, when you get into people's dreams and you start getting supernatural, to me, things that were scary were things that were real.
Right.
And the woods. And you don't know and where he is. We start to get later on into he's everywhere. That's a whole other issue. You know, some people think that it's scarier when someone could be omnipresent and everywhere. I'm one of those people that thinks it's scarier when the person is, like, right in front of you.
He just came across as goofy in the character of Freddy.
Yes.
Something nuts about Jason. Never talks, but no matter where you walk or run, he's going to get you.
Freddy is delivering the Schwarzenegger one-liners horror genre at the time. And they knew what they were. So, like, you got to appreciate that.
When it comes to Robert Englund movies, you can't beat The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Or how about his turn as Willy in the V miniseries?
Right. Well, we were talking a little bit ago about, you know, like deaths and kills and all this other stuff. And it takes a turn when you're younger. You're like, oh, my God, I don't want anyone to be killed. And you're getting scared. And then when you're older, you're like, this is hysterical. And they were so overt about putting people that, like, were just bad people in movies where you're like, I'd be okay if this person got killed. And I watched a few of them recently. I feel like in some ways 3 was the one that started it. And I wonder, and I'm wondering, you know, Pete, other than, like, tell me, what is it about 3 that's, you know, one of your favorite movies?
Well, like Graham said, I think it goes back to when I was younger and I'd go over Mike Cognato's house after school and we'd have the marathon. So we'd watch however many until I had to go home for dinner and then do the next batch the next day. And it's certainly him getting the mask. That's like the iconic moment. So, you know, that was cool. But again, I think what I really liked about it was the formula was coming together. Like each movie kind of introduced some things to kind of build out the mythology. And then it just kind of completely goes haywire because he's dead and then they bring him back and then it's supernatural Jason and zombie Jason that's when I really started to lose interest, because like you, that's not as effective for me as the mostly human kind of vulnerable killer that is stalking people. So that's why the first 4 for me are the ones that I go back to. Part 3, just, I don't know, it's watching it again tonight. It kind of, you know, it's really padded at the beginning because they show a lot of part 2 at the beginning to get you caught up.
They do, man. They really do.
Do they think in general, every movie, every single one, guys, right. Do they think we're morons?
I don't know. Sometimes when I'm watching them, I'm like, did I put the wrong movie on?
they even with 3, because I got the anaglyph like 3D version. They're like, they even put, hey friends. They put this on the screen. Hey friends, you know, you could wear your 3D glasses, but the first few minutes of this movie is going to be in 2D. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know if there's one thing about it. It's, you know, there were so many great scenes when you're a kid, like when he gets hung from the barn and then she opens the doors and he, like, you know, he starts pulling himself up one hand and then she, like, loses her shit. And she's like, you can't be alive, and, like, lifts up the mask so she realizes it's the guy that had attacked her 2 years earlier. Moments like that when you're a kid, just, I don't know, there's something about it. You're just like, oh, fuck yeah, this is awesome. This is the greatest thing ever.
That barn was a great backdrop.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Awesome backdrop.
We talked about it recently. Pete, tell Graham what you said about it, because I asked you about it. I'm like, what is it about that barn?
Well, I think part of it is, again, it's the camp atmosphere. There's a point that I want to get to that we can maybe come back to after. So I'll kind of keep it on track here with the barn. What I thought was effective about the barn was, again, it's that it's of the time. It's like the 80s. It's like this rustic feel. And the barn, I mean, I grew up with a barn in upstate New York at my grandparents' house. And so there was just hours and hours of play in there, and, you know, magical worlds. Like, you know, there was a rope that we would swing across. We would pretend that was this chasm from the Death Star and playing Star Wars and things like that. So what resonated for me with the barn was, like, it was like this great imaginative place. And there's so much stuff that they've got in Friday the 13th Part 3 that is just like all stuff in the little stable areas, and there's pitchforks, and there's a swing rope, and all this is like a second level. So you've got all this like great stuff. There's like, it'd be a great hide and go seek place. But then at the same time, it's also very claustrophobic. You know, it's used to good effect. Like when Chris, who is like the final girl, is escaping Jason at the end, she runs into the barn and she puts, you know, the shovel in the slats to try and keep him out. But of course, it's not going to keep Jason out. He like forces his way in, and then he puts like the even bigger piece of wood in, trapping her inside. And so it goes from like this great, you know, wonderful, wondrous place to being this very claustrophobic, trapped, deadly feeling. And I don't know, there was just something about that I think just resonated with me because of my upbringing and because I had spent, you know, so many hours and playing with my cousins in a barn in upstate New York, and I had these great memories that I'm like, yeah, I totally just put myself in those character shoes in part three when I was younger. I often would like imagine myself what I would have done when Jason was in there, and how I was going to escape and how I was going to trick him into going somewhere that I would be able to get out and things like that. So it really just fired my imagination.
And you had mentioned too, Pete, that weird like open hiding, like it's open, but there's places you can hide, but there's nothing you can really completely hide behind. You know what I mean? There's nothing you can really just cover yourself or get out of the way. So like he could find you, but there's a lot of nooks and crannies. But Graham, what do you think about like the barn? You know, you have obviously isolated in the woods is scary because people are not there. They can't, you know, you can't call for help, whatever else. But like, what do you feel about like the barn aspect that like?
Well, like Pete, I grew up on like 10 acres. We had a barn, and barns alone are scary. I was afraid of all like the spiders and shit in it. So if you had a killer in there, it's just.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a great backdrop.
So did you go play like with friends there, or did you just like kind of, would you even go in?
I'd go in, yeah.
Would you go, did you go with friends?
I'd go,
and hang
the thing
out
is, then? I'd go in and like, you'd hear like a raccoon run out, you know, because they had dug under it.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a nice barn.
No, so. But there's always something
yeah, there's
moving.
Something and, in there, so.
Well, and today's day and age is kind of funny because, like, they would, like, call that, you know, they go there with, like, a haunted show and be like, I heard something, therefore it's haunted. Could it be an animal? I don't know. It's haunted. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, but so the barn is, like, amazing. One thing about three that I just watched this again recently, and again, like, they released the 2D and the 3D version, and the 3D is Anaglyph. It's not the new, you know, 3D for TVs. It's that, you know, blue-red, mm-hmm. you know, version. I even had my wife come in the room the other day for a non-scary part, put it on. It's awesome. Like, it's really fun even to watch at home.
You're going to have to loan them to me.
Yeah, the
glasses.
Version. Yeah, it's
I've
really
got the movie.
Good. But, you know, it has very much, for, you know, people like our age, it has very much the Viewmaster feel. Like, has some really cool depth to it. One of the problems with three that I had was, it, you know, where we said 4, 5, 6 started to like know, you know, what it was, you know, making fun of itself or meta, but three, like in some ways because of the 3D gimmicks. Oh my God. I mean, you thought there were 3D gimmicks in other 3D early movies. They probably had 20 of them to the point of like, they did. But it was brilliant in some ways. It was shtick, but brilliant because they even went out of their way to hand you a joint so you felt like you were smoking pot. Because it was like at the time, it was like
the,
drugs
that
are
hippie
bad.
Guys in the
yeah.
van, right?
But it was like amazing that they were like, well, let's do this too. I mean, they did popcorn in your face. And oh, by the way, randomly, but two of the actors can juggle wonderfully.
Yeah, and that, well, that's before the 3D market got so saturated to the point where I vowed not to see Blade Runner in 3D a week ago because it's done.
And it's different. It's different now. Back in the day, it was like a shtick thing, and it was like, it had a throwback feel to it from the 50s to the 80s, kind of that Back to the Future thing.
Well, I hate to leave you all on a cliffhanger just as John Graham and I are really getting into the nitty-gritty of the Friday the 13th movie series, but we've already been talking for nearly an hour, and that's just a long time to ask anyone to listen to an episode. So what we're going to do is come back at you with a part two. Funny enough, given the series that we're discussing. So everyone, climb into your canoes, row yourself out into the middle of the lake, get a good night's sleep, and we will be back for part two of our in-depth discussion of the Friday the 13th movie series. We thank you, as always, for listening. You can find us on Twitter, at SoBadCast. For John and our guest Graham and myself, thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this episode of So Bad It's, and we will see you for part two. Ralph, anything else you want to add?